Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Sift is proudly supported by the Murdoch University School of Arts. Have you ever thought to yourself, I'd really love how to learn how to make something creative like a game or YouTube channel or report on the news? Well, you should take a look at what's on offer at Murdoch University. They'll give you the skills to hit the awesome creative goals you're aiming for. Keen to learn more? Have a look at murdoch.edu/arts to find out what they've got on offer. That's murdoch.edu/arts, or you can search Murdoch University for more information. Murdoch University School of Arts, proudly supporting Pixel Sift. Hello and welcome to Pixel Sift, the show dedicated to indie games from around Australia and the world. My name is Daniel, hosting for the first time, and joining me tonight is my co-host Gianni. How are you today?
I am going very, very well. I hope you're having a good week. You've had some good games recovered from... Well, we didn't go to PAX, actually. Did we recover, Daniel?
No, we didn't. We just recovered from the social media posts that we did, but we didn't do the actual travel, so yeah.
So we've got some fantastic guests on the program tonight, haven't we?
Definitely. Our guests tonight are Muhammad Hanif bin Ghazali and Tan Kang Soon from Singapore's Joystick Studios. Welcome, guys, and thanks for joining us.
Hi. Hey.
And so
thanks for inviting us.
Later in the show, we'll be hearing more about their latest game, Songbird Studios. But first off, Gianni...
Songbird Symphony.
My apologies. But first off, Gianni, what else are we going to take a look at?
We're going to be talking a little bit about the Game Developers Conference. You might have seen, if you've been online in the last couple of days or even the last week or so, that a lot of people are starting to say that it's too expensive to go along, especially if you live as far away as Singapore or Australia. It's very expensive to get there. And it's people are starting to look for alternatives about what they can do to develop their careers. So we'll be talking all about that.
Perfect. All right, let's get started.
Did you know Pixel Sift is available on other platforms? You can find previous episodes on iTunes, Pocket Casts, YouTube, and on the Pixel Sift website.
Now, the Game Developers Conference, or GDC, as it's known, runs in San Francisco each year. It's one of the biggest events for the games industry around the world. But for a long time now, there has been a conversation about how much it costs to get to the US for this convention, then how much it costs to go along, and also some factors about being safe as well, because some people don't like the fact that it's in America. It's not as easy to get there as it was for people from Europe and if you're from other countries outside of that. And it raised that question as to whether or not it's the best place for game developers to be going to develop their skills. Now, Kang Soon and Hanif, I'm curious, have you been to GDC before?
I did, but that was in 2015, so 4 years ago, yeah.
And did you enjoy the experience? Was it valuable for you to go along?
It was amazing. So that was actually my first time in GDC. That's my first and only time so far. And also,
first time in the US as well.
Yeah, first time in the US as well. Yeah, it was quite an eye-opening experience going like to the other end of the globe.
So there were some numbers that were posted recently by Jenny Shiola on Twitter, and she's a developer, a lead game designer at ArenaNet, which is obviously a very big company, makes a lot of games. But they were saying that some of these tickets are, on-site costs are 2,000 $499 US to go along, or even if you just wanted to get you know, just access to the talks that they have, online talks, they were $800 US just to go along. So people have started to say it's too expensive. What do you think about that? Was it, would it be too expensive for you to go again, to go back to GDC?
Yeah, it's definitely really expensive. Even during like how I got into GDC, got to visit GDC 4 years ago, is because I was an intern in a software engineering company. And then they were trying to do some, they were trying to get some game developers into their network. So, and they had like a spare ticket. And so I managed to get the spare ticket from them. And that's how I got in for free. But if not by myself as a student, I wouldn't be able to afford. Now, even right now as a full-time game developer, I wouldn't be able to afford go to GDC again.
I think those prices are like meant, it seems to me as if they're meant to be like, you're supposed to go there as a part, as a representative of a company that is supposed to sponsor you.
Prices, right? Defense, yeah.
Yeah. I guess as developers in a smaller studios it doesn't seem like it's meant for those kind of
going not for the indies. Numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going with the numbers that were stated, I mean, that kind of price for the ticket, that's about more, that's around 1 month's worth of full-time salary for like a typical like Singapore software engineer. Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Ticket, right? Yeah. Not even the like flight and the
accommodation.
Travel, food. Yeah.
So do you think would you be able to go, I guess is the question, if you could, is it something you would save up to go along for?
We would definitely have to save up assess, you know, whether it's really worth it.
Because we have to look at the alternatives, mm-hmm. and I think there are valid alternatives to GDC that can actually help us fulfill the same objectives, right, of marketing the game, or to look for partners in the industry.
Of course, it wouldn't be the same scale of GDC, but you know, for the price, it's worth it.
Yeah.
What were some of the alternatives that you think might be a better option, or maybe better for someone who's in Australia or Southeast Asia or anywhere else in the world?
Yeah. So far, we have traveled a lot in the APAC region. So in Asia. So we had went to there's the Busan Indie Connect Festival. So there's a lot of Western indie developers as well as some notable publishers who you will meet there. Like for example, Nicalis and Devolvers are consistently like the sponsors behind the event itself. And we also went to places like Taipei Game Show in Taiwan. And there's still another one.
Bit Summit.
Yeah, Bit Summit. But we haven't been there before. But I heard that there's a lot of Western developers who visit. So if you want to get network with like Western developers or publishers, I think there are cheaper alternatives in the Asia region if you are from this part of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one more thing is like because there's other benefits as well to GDC, right? In terms of like conferences, right? Mm. Definitely. And for those as well, there are alternatives. Any of the conferences we mentioned earlier do also invite devs from the Western region, not just the Asian region. But also, I think recently, Rami Ismail, right, tried Game Dev World, which...
completely online sort of conference.
Yeah, it was completely online. And it was kind of eye-opening as well because it had speakers from regions which are like, you know, uncommon, uncommonly represented. So it was quite interesting. Like in Singapore over here, we had this like get together, where we set up like with a projector, just to, you know, live stream everything
and kind of like a viewing party sort of thing.
Yeah. And it was interesting to watch conferences in all the languages, like Russian and whatever.
We asked a few people, Daniel, we've got a few answers from some people that we asked developers about whether or not they thought that whether GDC was out of their reach as developers, if it was something too difficult for them to do.
Yeah, we've got Maze over on the PixelSift Discord who says, we definitely have it easier in Australia with how many subsidies there are available from state government and industry initiatives. And our currency isn't as far from USD as many other countries are. This also comes into the Film Victoria opening up the GDC 2020 Assist Program, which grants up to $2,000 and is available for travel from Victoria to San Francisco to attend GDC. Also had a question on Twitch, and is there anything similar like that in Singapore as far as the Assist Program?
We used to have, but I think the government is Singapore government is pivoting to other areas in tech. So I don't think there is more of such offers, at least for us in the games industry. But then they still provide a lot of other forms of support in terms of network and equipment and facilities. But with regards to going for overseas, sometimes there's not much of a need for sponsorships because from the government, because like for all the conventions that we went for that we mentioned earlier, we only paid for the air tickets most of the time.
In accommodations.
Yeah. And sometimes
accommodations.
Yeah, sometimes accommodations. But a lot of times the ticket, the booth, and the accommodation itself is paid for by the event organizers, like from Busan and Taipei. Yeah. So
this sort of incentive, I guess, for indies. They tend to have this indie festivals, right, and award ceremonies and stuff. So if you submit your game and they like it and it gets nominated, then they do like provide a booth for you.
Yeah. So you don't spend more than $300 per trip for two people. Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Would you like to see something like that happen for GDC as well? Maybe, you know, they have quite a big, there's a number of sort of indie related events that are around GDC. Would that be helpful for getting across there?
Definitely, but the air ticket itself is is still a problem. Yeah, the air ticket.
Yeah. I travel. Definitely be, sorry. Keep going.
No. I mean, it would definitely be a huge help, like a huge incentive if just the ticket and the booth itself, kind of sponsored or subsidized. Yeah.
You wouldn't say no if they said to you, here's a free ticket. And
and
Daniel, you went along as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I went to GDC this year and I traveled with a friend. And so in WA, there's also another thing called the International Access Pass, which is similar to what Film Victoria have implemented. So it provides funding of up to $5,000 to support WA's working with games and interactive technology to build business networks and, you know, deals at major events and that sort of thing. So I traveled along with her, and then the stuff for me was out of my own pocket. And that only really meant that as far as the different tiers of pricing for tickets goes, I only got the expo floor, the baseline. And I think that for the International Access Pass, I think she had the Expo Plus, which you could go to a bunch of extra talks and stuff like that, and experience that. And so even at GDC, because the tickets, you know, going all the way up to $2,000 and beyond for on-site, there's a lot of other opportunities around GDC. It's not just the conference itself. So there are like the parties that happen afterwards that other game members still go and use that to network and stuff like that. So I think sometimes you factor those in as well, but then sometimes they also have extra costs, and it becomes a thing of, for me personally, just because I just graduated from university and studied games art design, and so I was going from that kind of perspective rather than somebody that is working for a company that got sponsored to go along and pay the big sort of fees. So for me, my experience was generally pretty positive. I think I got a lot out of it to talk to a lot of the industry professionals to see what they wanted from portfolios and just to see what the climate is like for games going nowadays.
Would you go back though, Daniel? That's the question. Could you afford to go back?
Probably not. I think not for a few years at least. And I think that for this trip in particular, I got most of what I needed out of it to not justify going again for a couple of years, you know, just because I feel like it'd probably be the same thing, just a little bit different.
We got a few more comments that came in from people on Twitter when we asked that question. Matt on Twitter said, "Is GDC out of your reach?" And Matt says, "Definitely yes. Cost is a big factor, and that cost does not match the benefit in Matt's opinion. But secondary to that, the political climate of the US and the state of San Francisco as a place to visit just makes it a bit unnerving for experience outside of the conference. Because the talks are excellent, and I have plenty of friends in game development to catch up with at the event. But these days, most of them don't go along unless their work pays for it." And Anza K on Twitter also said, "I had to seek a travel grant or some sort to even consider going. I've had a lot of help from friends who've either been to GDC or live in San Francisco to figure out where to stay and any advice for just traveling there. But given that the fact that I'm a non-binary person, it might even be even more difficult for me of how US's airport security works. And that's even more tricky for people who are transgender or anything like that as well." So it's a lot of factors there to consider about maybe whether or not GDC is the right place. But it sounds like there are alternatives around if you're keen to go along.
Hmm. Definitely. At the end of the day as well, it's not just the ticket cost, but for people like us who live all the way in Australia, there is also the added benefit
Singapore
is that the added thing of the emotional aspect of traveling such a long distance, long flights, getting everything. And there's all that to weigh up as well. And especially time zone differences as well. Falling asleep during the conference, you know, and that kind of thing. It's something to consider whether or not you travel a little bit earlier to get used to it, or you just power through it, you know, and just stay with it.
I think stay in APAC. What do you reckon, guys? all right, shall we jump into the next part of the episode?
All right, let's go.
Yeah, sure.
Hey there. If you're enjoying the show and you want to hear more, subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, or listen on pixelsift.com.au. See you there.
So this evening, we're joined by Mohammed Hanif bin Ghazali and Tan Kang Soon from Joystick Studios, and they're both here to talk about their new game, Songbird Symphony. So thanks again for joining us, guys. Could you give us a summary a little bit about what Songbird Symphony is all about?
It's a bit of a mouthful.
Songbird Symphony is a musical adventure game I'll say it's a musical-like, right? So it combines repeat after me, rhythm gameplay mechanics, as well as platforming gameplay mechanics to tell a story about a lost chick. His name is Burp, trying to find his parents and a place to belong. Yeah, and it's released on Steam, PlayStation 4, and Nintendo Switch. Yeah.
It's got a very cute design, and one that I think a lot of people of all ages can appreciate. Can you tell us about who is this game for? Who would you like to play it?
We at the start we thought that, you know, our target audience are teenage girls because they probably like cute stuff, you know, birds. But it turns out that that's not really the case. Like young kids play it, and then more mature audiences play as well, because there's this nostalgic factor in the aesthetic of the game, it having a very Disney-esque vibe to it, as well as the pixel art aesthetic. For myself, as I developed the game, I really wanted to make the game for my girlfriend. Yeah, and maybe that hence that explains the intended target audience for the game. Yeah.
Did anything change then? If you were sort of picturing it at maybe teenage girls might be the most interested in it. Did it change when you found out that young kids and older people with sort of nostalgic feelings were playing the game?
I wouldn't see much change to it. While we were developing the story, we kind of like. We there were a few things, you know, we decided that we were going to stick to, like there being no violence or no death or anything, because, you know, it's too cute. We couldn't bring ourselves to add those kind of stuff. So we just kind of wanted to embrace that whole heart main kind of aesthetic. That people of all ages can appreciate and resonates with. Mm.
So shifting over a little bit to the art style, which I find quite charming, and it's very super saturated sprites, you know, with bubbly animations. How did the art style, how was it developed, and where did the inspiration come from visually?
Well, I don't really know, because I'm an artist and an animator for the game, and I just drew it in a way that is easy to animate, which means starting with simple shapes, and then circle is a very simple shape. You know, when we go for animation courses or classes, the first thing they teach is how to animate a bouncing ball, right? So everything starts with a ball. It's a round shape, and then I just draw more lines on top of that circle, and it becomes a bird.
just draw some wings and a beak, and then there you are.
Yeah.
And I think the bouncing also adds to the aesthetic as well, because as a rhythm game and a musical, we want like the feeling of rhythm and everything included. So bouncing is something that we kind of used that like bounce along to the background music and stuff, just to make the players feel immersed that they are in musical world. Yeah.
Could you guys Gianni?
I was just going to say, what other things did you do, I guess, to capture music sort of visually as well? Because you mentioned that sort of bouncing along with the beat, but I'm wondering, are there any other aspects that you thought were really important to kind of capture that sound in an image?
Yeah, I think it's the karaoke words at the bottom of the screen. So during the music or the song battle portions of the game, as the birds are singing to one another, you can see that you can see the lyrics and the bouncing karaoke ball, as in the karaoke ball bouncing across the screen. So there are no singing in the game because we don't have the budget to hire singers, but we want the players to be able to sing along and to imagine the song playing in their head. Yeah, so I think that is really very helpful in making it feel like that you are watching a musical performance. Yeah.
And as a composer, I was a composer for, I must like admit that I, part of the reason why there are no like voice acting or no singing is also because, you know, I kind of want people to sing themselves, and hopefully maybe someone records themselves singing and shares it. But
have you seen anyone streaming the game and singing along? Have you noticed them doing that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, two different degrees of success. But I kind of feel like, you know, by doing that, it kind of makes the experience more special to you, because, you know, there is the correct way of singing, but but you singing it it kind of makes it like your song as well, as much as you know, anybody.
So some of the lyrics gets quite personal. Like there's one of them that says that everyone wish to find a place to belong, and then the players having to sing along to that lyrics, or imagining that song playing with their voice in it, really brings a tear to some of them. Yeah, that's the feedback we got.
It's like you're absorbing lyrics while you're singing it as well.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't intended.
Oh, it's a nice little bonus. Adrobial on Twitch has just said, I've got to play this game. They're obviously really liking the look of what it is, because they're watching gameplay video right now.
Oh, okay.
We've also got another question from 643 on Twitch. What was it like combining the rhythm and platforming genres together?
Oh, it's quite tricky.
Were there any challenges you had with that in particular?
Yeah. So one of the things that we kind of chose to do in terms of, you know, how to say, experimenting like fusing these two things together is we have these platforms, moving platforms that you kind of have to sing as the character, and the platforms will play a short pattern of notes that the character then has to repeat and sing to. And if they do it correctly, then, you know, the platform activates and moves accordingly. So that itself was tricky because, you know, it's a mechanic that you don't really often see, so there's no benchmark to build onto. The tricky part was how to represent the players like correctly, singing the correct rhythm, and how to actually show the visually. It's because we found that there are two types of people who play rhythm games: the people who are visual gamers and people who like more audio. So some will rely more on the audio cues, but some will rely more on the visual cues, and we have to take both of those.
I remember the first time I played it, I had a chance to play it very early on when you just started the game, I think not that far after leaving university, and I just couldn't get the rhythm at all. I think the music wasn't in it at that point, or it's very basic sort of music in it. And I remember just thinking, oh, geez, I feel so bad. I'm so bad at this rhythm game. But then when I played the more recent version of it as well, it's interesting to see how, especially I think it didn't quite have the karaoke bouncing ball in it at that point. So getting those little rhythm and seeing it there made such a difference for me being able to actually keep in time.
We had like really early demos like out. While we were still developing, just to build hype and stuff, and to get ourselves known. So by doing that, we also managed to see the and try to fix it. So yeah, that's one of the things that we found, basically catering for visual and also people, because they can be thrown off like rhythm wise by a lot of things. And you have to make sure that you work.
Fail fast, iterate fast. I mean, that's the usual principle for engineering, not just for games.
Thanks for watching Pixel Sift. If you're just joining us on one of our live platforms, we're talking to Mohammed Hanif bin Ghazali and Tan Kang Soong about their game Songbird Symphony. So Gianni, would you like to ask any more questions?
Yeah, I'm really curious. The game's been out for a little while now. People have been able to play it. What's the most rewarding thing that anyone has said to you about the game? What is this thing that goes, this is the reason why we made this game?
It's, for me, it's just fun to see them like play it. I love watching live streams and seeing the reactions. It's also... I guess the message the overall message of the story kind of resonates with
when you see someone connecting with it and really sort of feeling that. How about you, Kang Soong?
For me, so it's watching my girlfriend play the game. So how it works is that every time she says she's playing the game, then I'll immediately like run to her room and watch her play it. So I watch her play it from start to finish. And then when she finished the game, then she was staring at me, and then she was like, and she asked, "You really made this game for me?" And I say, "Yeah, this game is made for you." And then she just broke down and started crying.
Oh, wow. Aww.
So that was a really impactful, because I think I have I've done something good.
It always takes you I think it always takes you by surprise. Tears that come when you're writing it, especially like if you're writing and developing it for such a long period of time, you know, it kind of like wears you down a bit. Like like what's so special about this game kind of gets lost on you. But seeing people, you know, seeing the genuine reactions from people, yeah, it just takes you back.
It's definitely a great boost to keep motivated to continue developing it so more people can experience the game.
Yes,
definitely.
So it's out on a number of platforms now. You can play it on computer, or you can play it on your console, on the Switch and on the PlayStation. Is the game finished? Are you happy with where it is at the moment?
There are some bugs that we're still handling. Well, not a lot of major bugs, probably number one.
Yeah.
But in terms of Burp's story, the main character's story, I'd say it's finished. in like for the universe.
Yeah, who is Uncle P before he met Burp? And what are the stories of the other birds in the jungle?
This is about characters.
Yeah, we have some ideas for it. So maybe the next game won't be about Burp, but might still be in the Songbird universe featuring other birds. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So you're inspired now to try to spin it off and have a whole bunch of different stories.
There's no like concrete things yet, but you know, it's in there.
Yeah.
And Kangsoon, will you be making that another one for your girlfriend, or will you pick another family member maybe to go, this one's for my mom, this one's for my auntie, or?
Well, maybe the next one would be for our kid. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a few years later. Yeah.
643 says the Songbird cinematic universe. To watch, and it looks like a lot of people are really excited about Adrobial on Twitch is really looking at it. It's not sure about saying dabbing is awesome, whether or not that's a good thing or not. But yeah, it looks like they're very excited. So if people want to play the game, they can head on to the Steam where they can buy it there. It can pick it up on PlayStation 4 as well as on the Switch. And if you want to find out more information about it, you can head to joystake.com or the Joystake on Twitter. To just find out more about it and give it a go. And there's a demo available as well if you want to play it as well. So Kangsoon and Hanif, thank you so much for joining us and telling us a little bit about your game.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us. Yeah.
All right, and thank you for joining us on episode 134 of Pixel Sift. This episode has been hosted by myself and Gianni, and thanks for joining me tonight, Gianni.
Did a great job in the chair, Daniel. Very good.
Thank you. First time. All right, it's been pretty good. So Pixel Sift is produced by Scott Quigg, Sarah Ireland, Fiona Bartholomeus, Mitch Lowe, and Gianni Di Giovanni is our executive producer. We wouldn't have been able to make 134 episodes of Pixel Sift if we didn't have the support of Murdoch University. So go and check them out and tell them that we sent you. And if you're keen to learn more about a game, a great creative degree, head over to murdoch.edu/arts. And as always, we'll be sticking links to topics we talked about in the show notes on our website. It's www.pixelsift.com.au.
And we'd love for you to join us on Discord as well. We have a number of developers. You can join us there and ask questions about the games that we talk about and also talk about the games that you're playing. Maybe you're playing Overcooked or maybe you're playing something else fun and you want someone to join with you. Yeah, come join us on there. That's pixelsift.com.au/Discord. And if you like what we do, can I ask you a favor? We need your help to share the show, so I want you to tell a friend. You can get on your brother's or sister's phones and subscribe them on their podcast player, or just find someone else who might like video games and want to learn a little bit more about it, and you can start their journey into podcasts, because we need your help to share the show. So if you could do that, we'd love you forever for it.
And our next episode will be on the 14th of November. And if you join us this time next week on the 7th, it'll be Pixels of Plays, where we play some of the indie games that feature on our show. That's all for this week. Thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you next time. See ya.
Bye.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.